Now, more of Fred Grandy live from the Washington Times.
That's right. Filling in for Andy Parks this week at 7:30 a.m., 102.9 FM, WTNT, The Truth. And this is my first opportunity as a fill-in host to talk to Emily Miller, the senior editorial writer of the Washington Times. Emily, I've got two of your columns in front of me. They're both titillating. I'm not sure where to start. But when you ask where the Tea Party is, that's one that really trips my trigger, because I've asked that myself a couple of times. Where are they?
You know, it has, you know, it's one of those things that's been going through my mind recently. You know, 2 years ago, that's all we ever heard about.
Right.
You know, I mean, they were the dominant story of the election, and they made a huge impact on the 2010 election. I mean, they are the ones who brought Republicans back into power in the House. And then this year, you just really don't hear much. You know, I sort of thought, is it the media? Is the media not interested, or is there less activity? It seems like there's just really less activity. And what's sort of unfortunate about this is, you know, all their work in 2008 was about bringing people to Washington who would be fiscally responsible, who would start cutting down the debt, would start cutting spending. And instead, you know, this week, the Senate, or today actually, the Senate will be voting to pass a new continuing resolution that will keep spending up and actually raise it by $106 billion over the next 6 months.
Well, let's talk a little bit about a continuing resolution, because if you don't speak legislative, obviously you don't know a continuing resolution is essentially a default position that Congress uses when they can't get to any kind of resolution on a new budget, so they simply fall back on last year's spending levels, which means the inordinately high spending levels for the last fiscal year will continue into the next fiscal year until they either do something or pass another continuing resolution. Now, among other things, correct me if I'm wrong here, is this will also include the money that is currently going to Egypt, not a little bit controversial in light of what's just happened, and also to Hamas, which a lot of people may not know is currently getting $447 million from this administration. That just continues in place, right?
Everything is the same. Nothing changes. In fact, even what really is bothering the House a lot, which they lost in this negotiation, which happened during the August recess and nobody was around, was that it doesn't even stop the Obama administration from eliminating the work requirement for welfare recipients.
Ah, which leads to your second article talking about a capital handout to Romney. Now, in this situation, Speaker Boehner is going to try and have a vote on the floor to keep that from happening, right?
He is, and it'll pass this week, and there'll be a vote saying, you know, that the House disapproves of this and that, you know, welfare recipients should have a work requirement. The problem is, obviously, it's not going to pass the Senate.
No, of course
not.
It's not
going to get signed by Obama, whereas if it was in the CR, it would have, because that was well agreed to a while ago, that the president's going to sign it probably as soon as this week, and they'll be funding the government for 6 months.
Well,
and the other problem on both sides is that in this negotiation of the CR in August, they came out with not only last year's spending, which we already know has put us in the hole $1.2 trillion.
Right.
And so it'll start happening to go all over again next year. They added $106 billion, which they don't count against the statutory caps that exist right now because of the debt ceiling deal last year. So they have $106 billion for Iraq and Afghanistan, the wars. Well, I guess not as much as Iraq anymore, Afghanistan. And as well as what they call disaster relief, which, as you know, is
sure
off books.
Yeah, it's always off books.
It doesn't count, even
right,
though disasters happen every year.
Well, but more to your point, going back to the Tea Party, it seems to me, from what little I've known or seen about the Tea Party, is they've concentrated for the most part from the ground up, and obviously in 2010 that meant electing a House, falling a little short in the Senate. But this year, for example, they have succeeded, for example, in getting a guy like, Richard Murdoch in Indiana to defeat longtime Republican Senator Richard Lugar. But
right.
And tell me.
Ted Cruz in Texas.
Ted Cruz is another good example. Deb Fischer in Nebraska. But I guess what I'm asking you is, even if they succeed in get a Republican Senate and they don't concentrate on the presidential race, they still won't have accomplished much, because if the president vetoes a lot of their new spending fiscal discipline, they won't have the votes to override him.
And that's the shame of it all, is, you know, there's this huge movement in America to really reform entitlements, and that's the biggest problem with debt.
Mm-hmm.
Shrinking the government back to about a 20% GDP, which is what Romney wants to do, and then tackling entitlements, because Medicare is the driver of this debt. And most Americans now, I think, understand that and want that. And yet, you know, if we, the President of the United States has absolutely no interest whatsoever in reforming entitlements, none in cutting the size of government, and as long as he's in power, and as long as people do not, either don't show up to vote or, you know, vote for a Republican or vote for an independent, he's going to have another 4 years, and the country's going to continue in these trillion-dollar deficits.
So back to your question about where the Tea Party is. I think it's fair to say that they are in the trenches in various states, Indiana and elsewhere. But it doesn't seem to me that they quite understand the consequence of not electing the presidency. Or perhaps, and I'd like your opinion on this, were they so disgruntled by the outcome of the GOP primary process, where obviously people like Rick Santorum and to a lesser degree perhaps Newt Gingrich did have Tea Party support but didn't make the final cut?
That's a very good point, and I think, you know, that's very true. This Tea Party, maybe this time last year, was so incredibly engaged. They loved Michelle Bachmann. They loved Herman Cain, like you said. They loved Newt Gingrich. You know, they had their favorites, and none of them won. And so, you know, Mitt Romney just doesn't inspire them as much as, you know, the others. And, you know, they've always sort of been, because they grew up in 2010, a local, you know, or reader state operation. Mm-hmm. They've never really been a national operation. And maybe, you know, the fault lies in the RNC or the Romney campaign and not engaging these small Tea Party groups throughout the country. Because Romney's policies are all the policies they want. It's cutting the size of government.
Right.
It's repealing Obamacare. It's growing revenue through tax reform. I mean, all the things that they say they want, and yet they're not actively, you know, out supporting him and getting out the vote.
Well, then let me throw another possibility out at you, because as popular as the Tea Party is at a grassroots level, they have never really found favor with the inner circle of Republican apparatchiks and principally a lot of high-powered consultants. And the person that comes to mind here is Sarah Palin, who obviously had terrific Tea Party support in 2008, but ran afoul of all of the traditional Republican consultants, Steve Schmidt and others. And I'm just wondering if the Palin effect overhangs the Romney campaign among the people that are advising him.
Oh, I mean, there's always such a huge support for Sarah Palin. And I think if we saw Sarah Palin, as, you know, I wrote today, as you saw about the top surrogates for Romney out there, the ones who represent him in the states and, you know, not their own. It's like Marco Rubio, Rob Portman, Kelly Iode, people like that, great Republicans, great speakers, very dynamic people. But if you had Sarah Palin, think of the difference in turnout. Think of the difference in excitement. I mean, she has just drives such attention. I don't know why they're not using her, you know, and I don't know how, you know, she doesn't seem very engaged. She didn't come to the convention. You know, she's been sort of hands off. And I think, you know, if she was involved, it would enormously help Romney.
Well, but it's
maybe they think that she's polarizing on the other side, though.
Sure, but this is Romney's race to lose. It seems to me incumbent upon him to reach out to her as opposed to wait for her to come to him. And this is the one piece I don't understand. I do want to turn to one other thing, though, because seeing as how when I listen to Andy and you talk, you are obviously the resident gunslinger at the Washington Times. And I did want to play a clip, and maybe you've already heard it, of Oliver North at the Value Voters Convention over the weekend, because this is right in your wheelhouse, and I wanted to get your reaction. Charlie?
And I give every one of our grandsons, not when they're born, but a little bit later, because their moms insisted on it, I give each one of them three presents. And a note. The three presents are a shotgun, a Bible, and a note with a compass attached to it.
Okay, I'm not going to engage you in a conversation about gift and gift ideas for newborns, but I did want to talk about giving shotguns to kids. And as Ollie talked, and I don't know where he is on this because I've not asked him personally, but he's talking about his grandsons. If you're going to give guns to children, Emily, shouldn't granddaughters get one too?
Absolutely. And I have to say, I'm going to have to call and ask him both what shotguns he gives, but also hope he gives them to the granddaughters as well. Because I'll tell you, I've gotten, you know, I own a handgun.
I'm sure,
and
I know you
I've
do.
I've gotten okay with that. But lately I've been shooting clays a little bit more often with a shotgun, and I found it to be so much harder. But I've gotten better, so I do think it's a misconception that.
But let me go to the point, because I've got three grandchildren. They're 7, 5, and 3. Okay, I have yet to take them to the range, and I'm not sure their parents will ever allow me to do that. But I want to talk about the whole idea of taking young kids, and you tell me when the appropriate age is, to a range and teaching them how to shoot. Is this a?
In most of the country, people don't take their kids to ranges so much as they just go in the backyard or on the farm and, you know, show them how to use a .22. And I think, you know, that's how kids, especially in the middle of the country, in the rural areas, grow up, knowing how to shoot and knowing the safety rules from a young age and just having them barreled into them. And you know, more in the urban areas, I think when you have a gun in the house, I spoke to a policewoman once who has children in the house, and she said, you know, one of the things they do is as soon as the kids are aware of anything, it starts teaching them the safety rules, showing them the guns, showing them where they are, so there's no curiosity.
All right, well,
then take them to the range as soon as you can, because the sooner the kids know how to use a gun, the less chance they are of, you know, thinking it's a curiosity.
Okay, then the minute that I have left, I need to ask you a very pointed question. At what point do I go to my son and say, I would like to take, and his oldest is a girl, at what point can I take Annabelle to the firing range?
That Annabelle's 9?
She's 7.
7. I'd say you want to do it for her double-digit birthday.
Okay.
She's 10.
All right.
Something to look forward to.
All right. So we'll just pop up the Barbies on the fence and shoot the heads off, right? No, I don't know. I mean, I'm talking to you.
not for Barbie. It'll take care of Barbie. But, I mean, you know what's really fun is to shoot some fruit. That would make her laugh.
Okay.
You know, and you start with a guy like a .22, so there's no kick, and it's just sort of fun, and of course, spend a lot of time on the safety rules ahead of time and watch her and have put up a big, you know, because I don't know where you live. I don't know what's legal. But if you could just put up a watermelon, shooting out a watermelon is pretty hilarious.
All right. So we'll start with melons and work down to grapes. We're going to have to leave it there, Emily. Thanks very much for your comments and
your
counsel.
Thank you.
And we'll be back right after this.
Don't take your guns to town, son. Leave your guns at home.